David Bohm Seminar, Sunday, March 22nd, 1992, 11:30 morning session, Oak Grove School, Ojai, California.
Makes about the fifth or sixth year that we've done the seminar, and we on the Bohm committee sort of put the brochure together and mail it out, and it's getting to the place now that when people register, you say, oh, look who's coming. Oh, there's so-and-so. And you can pretty well guess what they're going to be like. You know, it's like a cast of players that continue to come back, and it gets so habitual and conditioned that people even sit in about the same place, or sit next to the same people they usually sit next to, and make similar comments. And I'm not making myself outside this, I'm in the same boat. In fact, I might call it a bit of a ship of fools who come together to go down the ocean, and with that whole conditioned quality. And the thing that strikes me is how during yesterday and today, we keep missing it. It's like we come together and there's almost a sense of seeing, and then it goes away. And I was just wondering if you might talk about the difference between talking about the process and being in the process and seeing the fog, the conditioning, watching it as it's happening.
Yeah, so when we talk about it, that gives a certain amount of information about it. Now, see, when we're talking, we can be talking anger, talking fear, and be in it. The difficulty there is that you tend to become very disoriented. You see that it's hard to keep it going. Because you see the things which you see are apparently not necessarily the things that are there. Right? Now, I was trying to suggest something which might be a sort of starting on something easier to get a notion of how this thing works, you see. Now, I get a sense of how it works. You can also be aware that you're following your conditioning in this and this and this. Now, and it will help, you know, but if you stay with all these things, it will certainly carry you far. But I wanted to suggest another approach, which we begin to call attention to how this process actually works. So you can begin to observe it in such a way as to start learning about it. Or learning it.
Is there a tacit agreement in this room that there are places we won't go? That's the kind of thing I'm feeling is that we can go so far, it's happened so many times in these dialogues, and then there's just a little explosion that everybody uncomfortably moves away from the subject. It's been suggested to me several times when people observe it. I think that's the kind of feeling he's portraying. And I get the feeling that we have a tacit agreement here that we will not go in certain places or experience certain phenomenon in this room.
I don't agree with that.
You don't have to agree with it to have a tacit agreement.
Is this one of the places you don't want to go to?
I felt that quite often, and I've had a lot of people suggest that to me. It was like, for me, an example was when the lady there and I started communicating, I felt, and people felt the temperature raising, which I have nothing against the temperature raising. There was a kind of whoosh, where people moved away from the heat and tried to damp it down. And I'm going, hey, if this is the way it has to go or might go, who knows? But there's, to me, it inferred that there are certain things that people aren't willing to experience or aren't willing to go into. And I think that this is a key issue in this whole lack of movement beyond a certain stage. We get to a certain stage and the lights go on.
Can I make a suggestion regarding that statement? Because I recall last year at the dialogue on the fourth day, that did happen a couple of times. And what was happening was what happened out there in the real world. And then someone, in a couple of instances, it was David, would just point a finger at it and say, hey, it's happening. This is what we're talking about.
That this is actually what happened to me this morning.
Yes.
I don't think it was anyone was not willing to go with it, but it was revealing itself.
Exactly.
Well, what happened to the inner?
Also,
but the content was unimportant to the activity itself. It was the content of the conflict that was being pointed out. What you were arguing about, I can tell you of extraordinary things that I did in my life for the most ridiculous reasons, because I was lost in the anger of the moment.
See, I think though that sometimes the divergence is, I want to be careful with attributing sort of a negative value to the heating up. Yes, if it makes it impossible for us to, you know, stay sort of self-responsible in terms of the flow, or if our purpose to establish or protect, uphold some value takes over from the overall intention to kind of share meaning together.
But that's my point, to me.
But sometimes the divergence can help to, and the heat can also help like a catalyst to vivify certain aspects of our experience.
There's no doubt about it. I'm not disagreeing with it. What I'm suggesting is that it becomes irrelevant for the rest of us. Two of you are in that argument. Once we see that you're in the argument, it would be like if I were doing a chalk talk, I would put up a cartoon of two people arguing and say, fine, this is what happens to me in everyday life. Granted, I don't know that there's going to be any revelation beyond the fact that this is what happens.
Well, I wasn't having an argument with anybody.
Well,
for two of them. And we have a cultural bias against having revelations of an emotional or any kind of temperature. We have, as whatever we want to call ourselves, we have a tremendous cultural bias against going into emotional.
All right,
it may not be a resistance to emotion. It may be a dissipation of energy that's caused by the friction, and it may not be serving the purpose.
When we refer to this tacit agreement not to go certain places, when we characterize it that we have this tacit agreement, we're talking about individuals, it's really all we're doing is observing thinking here, both externally as produced by other people in the room, and also internally. And thinking has a tacit agreement not to go certain places. And as it starts to move there, I can feel myself either start to produce thinking to try to dissipate the energy that he just referred to, or I can wait and have somebody else do that for me in here by speaking up at just the right point to move it just slightly off where we were, and in that way not to get too close. And it's not that we have this tacit agreement, it is just the way thinking operates when it begins to see that it's in jeopardy.
Well, I'm inclined to agree with Mary. Sometimes we get a little pseudo-intellectual, mm-hmm. and I'd like to get on with it, as Mary said, do it.
Yeah, we were talking, and it just seems like there's this line, and we keep going like this right mm-hmm. above the line, and we somehow don't seem to go into the fog to get to the core. We don't seem to be talking about what our intentions here are at a conscious or unconscious level so that we can start to move. I recognize we're not going to come up with some grandiose action plan, you know, to solve the world's problems. I'm not suggesting that. But I think a group such as this, it could be really interesting fodder if we really started to cut through the fog and really started to examine some of our underlying intentions of what it is that is important to look at. I guess that's where my part of my frustration mm-hmm. is. I'd like to start to get to that level.
Is this distinct from the other years? Is that different, or is this the same every year? Or?
The only distinction I see is we're talking about it.
I would like to suggest that if we could give people, and especially David, chances to complete what they're trying to say, and maybe slow down a bit and not jump in quite so fast, because it seems to me the same people are jumping in all the time. And I, for one, would love to have a little bit more space so that people that have not been here before or people who haven't had a chance to respond, and especially hearing David complete his thoughts.
Right.
I feel very strongly about that.
Well, I'd like to say that having attended literally hundreds of these meetings, all of these things that are being said are always said.
Well, I have to say, this is the first time I've ever been here, and I'm confused why that happens. Why do we not go forward? I'm really posing that. I don't
well, not
understand.
Not just but why do we not go forward, but why do we always, all of the complaints that are being expressed are always expressed at some point.
So what? Can we go on?
Maybe this is going up. Okay. We may have a notion of what going on means.
Where do you
want to
go?
I did a picture of what you call jumping impulsive thinking.
Yeah.
But it gives us, a clearer picture now. What does it mean exactly? Jumping, impulsive, like an insect, jumps up, and this is, gives us a clear picture. That helps me. If I can see that, it helps me easier to shut up.
You see, I think that in the process of dialogue, which is starting, the temperature going up is a necessary part of the process from which we learn. I've learned also that there's an automatic movement of thought to keep it down, if we could stay with that temperature going up without it's running away into complete chaos, then we could learn quite a bit. I mean, we might be a real change in consciousness. So the point about dialogue is that we get the mirror from outside, from other people. I think that the thought process is conditioned to do all this, and without noticing it, we will fall into this pattern. Well, also, I would like to make the remark that some of these things should be done at home, you see, by yourself, to try to see how it works, you see, as well as in this group. I think that if the process of dialogue gets started, then people will find that all of thought seems to have this tacit agreement to move away from such disturbing things. At the same time, it can't help but get into them if you keep at it. As if people keep on talking and whatever comes to their mind, then sooner or later we are going to have this, you see. That thought cannot carry out this agreement not to do it. And so it's best if it came up naturally in that way.
David, you're suggesting it's really useful to display some of these things and see what we're actually doing.
Yes, the display, but it could go so far that it would turn into an explosion of hate or something, you see.
I think we can trust the group energy and good intentions, but that never goes that far. This is possibly a safe environment.
Yes.
To display some of our tendencies and patterns.
What would be the basis of this confidence?
Well, actually, a few years' experience in different groupings, but it gets really hairy at times, I think.
And I think it takes quite a while to be together before that trust develops, and we haven't been together that long, so most of us don't feel it's such a safe environment.
Mm-hmm. But
that's
in the sense
why
of
people back off. Mm.
But that's
leads
kind of
to
what
my old question: what is it that's unsafe?
And how do you know if it's unsafe unless you take a risk and find out?
Hey, the feeling of unsafety is inside, right? It's not from my. If I'm being threatened, it can't be by you people. It has to be by something that I'm already being threatened by inside.
Unless I hold a gun to your head.
Great. No, but I don't see any gun.
Well, I'm just saying.
But I'm acting as if there's a whole bunch of guns in the room.
I'd like to ask if these people, where the heat was rising, believe, feel and believe that that emotion was conducive to communication.
I'd like to ask.
To better, to improve communication. Well, what, isn't that what you mean by heat? I thought that's what you meant by heat.
I wasn't feeling particularly charged in it, other than I felt like we were providing kind of a responsive enough pressure with each other to see if we can feel into something that, you know, that if in the spirit of play that we've been talking about, you know, sometimes we can provide like an environment, like push hands, you know, or something, where we just kind of give enough, you know, resistance to one another to see if something moves us. Not that we're trying to push the other opponent over or right. convert them.
But while you're playing, there are 45 other people sort of watching. And unless they're caught up in it, it's really pretty boring because we've seen it so many times.
Well, I'm not sure how boring it is. That's my point. Yeah. I said, okay. Saw it. It's much like, again, if I had a screen, I would have put a cartoon, something up there saying, something like this, folks. And they did that, something like this, and I thank them for it, really, because they had the guts or whatever it took for them to move it to that space, which apparently some people believe none of us have the capability of doing. Perhaps we do it every day in our lives, and such is the case. These two individuals were kind enough to offer a chalk talk piece for us. And now let's move on.
Well, but even going like this is demonstration that we all came here to this weekend with different intentions in mind. But what seems to be happening so far is that we're keeping it in this real safe intellectual domain, thinking about thinking, and none of us, except for a couple of people, are sharing what's real. You know, in other words,
what's real?
What's real?
This is what's real, isn't it?
Yeah, now it's what's real.
Okay.
Why?
Why is it any different than what was happening 10 minutes ago?
Because we're talking about real concerns, personal intentions. We're getting to the intention level. I think.
And you think that if all of us came here with different intentions, there may not be people who came here with the intention of observing what's going on here?
No, I'm not making that assumption.
Okay,
well, maybe that would be an interesting assumption to start to get out. In other words, what are our intentions here? You know,
what difference does it make?
I think it makes every bit of difference.
Please go ahead. It's all right.
Could I make a couple of points just briefly? The gentleman over here mentioned a moment ago, is that heating up conducive to communication? And I think maybe not, but it may be conducive to perception, which I think may be different. And certainly the people involved in that may have the opportunity in that moment for perceiving the nature of that heat. And there probably are a number of people in the room who are caught up in it, as someone mentioned before. Immediately kind of identify with one side or the other. And that's just an extension of the same thing, that those people also maybe could directly perceive something. And probably the rest of the people, excuse me, probably most of the rest of the people are irritated by it. So there's heat there. And there may be some perception in that, the possibility for some perception. And that leaves very few people who couldn't in some way benefit from that kind of interchange.
Exactly.
So it seems that there's perhaps a place for that to happen. And let it come up and move on. And if it comes up again, let it come up. But to reject that, or to say that we must have that, either one, I think, is a setup.
Yeah. I think what's important is for people to be aware that this is an opportunity to look, to investigate.
The seed is the mirror we were talking about.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's part of it, yeah. The mirror may be in relation to other people or in relation watching, or relation between people. Because everything that is going on there is experienced within.
happen to see how we carry it, I think.
Yes, well,
I mean, you see, the point is then that you can have a reaction to material that's intellectual or to anything. Well, a long time ago in Israel we had a dialogue of sorts, and the one thing came up that while we were talking, somebody came up with about Jews and Arabs in their relationship. Somebody came up with the statement that Zionism is interfering with the relation between the Jews and the Arabs. He said it very quietly, and it disturbed him. But somebody else got very disturbed, and he popped up. He said, "But without Zionism, the country would go to pieces." And then everybody began to get drawn into it, and people began to argue in a heated way. The meaning of those things affected people deeply.
David, I wonder if when things heat up like that, some people get drawn into it and some people want to back off it and diffuse it. I wonder if it's because actually it awakens levels of pain in people.
Well, it would awaken, yes, pain and fear and whatnot.
The third group, that they may see that and they may certainly recognize it in themselves, and that's what we're watching. We're watching how all of these things are happening, and this, I frankly think that this year there's a qualitative difference in what's being communicated than there has been before. And perhaps it's because of this interaction. I used the term crackling yesterday, and I meant it. I felt that people were really awake and were interacting on a slightly different level, perhaps. Different, not more, better, or just different than the past.
So is it our relationship to the heat, then, that we're playing with? If we run away from it, we've accepted a fixed relationship to it, and if we let it sweep us away, we've accepted a fixed relationship, and if there's something else, just that's the point.
Yes. Now, other people who are not so drawn into it can come in and defuse the issue somewhat, so it stays within bounds. You see, otherwise, for example, it would have been quite possible for one of these people in the Israel dialogue just to walk out, and that would end the whole thing, and that would not be a good consequence. Right?
It's also, we also have to, that there's also the danger, that we can diffuse something in avoidance, out of fear for memory, too. Mm-hmm. So we can keep kind of dissipating energy from the larger.
Yes, but also, if you've observed this so many times, after a while, suddenly, there's a knowing, it doesn't work.
Well, I think the problem...
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah,
a certain kind of interchange. It's just suddenly, that doesn't work. You see? It's not like you think it or anything. It's just known.
What kind of... I'm not following. What kind of interchange?
See, the interchange that was going on here, actually, in the talking about it, has energized the whole meeting, which is very nice, because if we're not here with energy, there's no use. But of course, we could have been just as energized before. So the fact that we needed something like this to be energized tells us something about ourselves, first of all. But then, the other thing is that when that thing builds up and people get locked in this way, and I've seen them go out the door so many times, actually, and you can do this for years. I mean, we've literally done it for years. And change happens. It's so slow. See, the only reason this is working now is because David Bohm is here.
No.
Without him, the chaos would be so great. It would be a waste of time. Not because of anything you're saying or doing, but that people have put themselves under your umbrella and they put a limit.
But
That's not necessary. It's all because Mike is here, and he's from the December group, and us November groups never did that.
Yesterday, some of us who've been involved with dialogue groups got together and were talking, and this idea of safety, of emotional, I presume, safety, came up, and somebody made the remark, which was, for me, a very important differentiation. They said, well, is it safety that people are talking about, or is it comfort? And I suddenly took that a lot of people who feel, well, it's unsafe, really have come to be comfortable. They want to have their intellects titillated, they want to hear some ideas that they're already vaguely familiar with, you know, expounded once again, they feel good, it's familiar. They don't want anything to stir that up. They don't want new ideas. They don't want to, you know, to look deeper. They're quite happy with that and feel threatened when something like what's happening now comes about. There is a real concern with emotional safety when people are so-called battered verbally for some idea they've expressed.
So what if I understand you correctly, what you're saying, Don, is what's happening now is we're observing what's happening now. We're watching how we interact with each other.
I'm raising the issue that some of it involves safety, some of it involves danger, and some of it just involves a desire to be comfortable.
Mm-hmm. Well, there is another thing that some of us may have come to stir things up. There is this tendency, especially nowadays, that people don't think anything is happening unless something is being stirred up. And perhaps that's also
a very good point. I do know, David, I brought two articles for David, one of which was in Life magazine.
Yes, I don't know what, did you see them around?
I have them, but one of them was in the last issue of Life magazine, the Life and Pictures issue. It was an article by Barbara Ehrenreich, who's been writing, and it was called The Cauldron of Anger. And it was a very clear perception of what's going on. Certainly, the life as I lead didn't look around, that there's an awful lot of angry people around. I brought another article from Philadelphia magazine, which is sort of like the New York in Philadelphia. And on the cover, and that's how that poor man felt, because he was a writer writing in Philadelphia, and the name of his article was Rage. And then Time magazine, 3-4 weeks ago, had as their cover story, The Angry Voter. So now we're getting down to the, not anger per se, but the voter is angry. And I suggest that all of us, if anything has changed over the last few years since I've been coming, is that there has been a heightened activity, which may be, in fact, expressing itself as anger in our society today, that's very, very volatile, very volatile. And the reason I brought it to David was, I'll tell you, it's in me. And what I wanted to discuss was why, and how does one deal with that?
Well, you see, you can deal with it immediately if you can, but suppose it continues anyway. I mean, I don't know what is the experience of the people here. I mean, do we dissolve the anger immediately?
Well, it seems that rage, anyways, is something that builds up over a long period of time, and the reason it seems to build up is that it's been held in. So one thing that a group such as this might be able to do is to dissipate some of that. Because where we can have free expression of it in, whether this is safe or not, I mean, I feel pretty safe here, but in a group that is safe such as this, then we don't have the buildup of the intense emotion, because it's only when it reaches that intense stage that people fear it. If we were to allow, you know, people who were raging to be able in a safe environment to express whatever it was, in a safe way, probably we wouldn't be having that effect. They've had so much built-up anger, so much built-up pain, that at a certain point they reach a point where they can't hold it in anymore, and then it erupts in a very inappropriate way.
Now, where in this process would the learning take place?
In what process?
The process of getting dissipating my rage.
Well, it could take place at the point where a reactive, or using the terminology we're developing here, at the point at which I first feel a reflexive response coming out to something. You know, in other words, something has hurt me, and so my response might be to feel anger right away. And so where it could come out is when I first feel that. And so in a group such as this, I might express that and look at it, and with the group acting as a mirror to me, I might start to get underneath my anger. I might start to look at the assumptions or start to look at some of the reasons that I might be feeling the anger with the group's help. Therefore, it doesn't build and build and build before I just go crazy and erupt.
I look at this sort of like, I look at the analogy with the pollution in the stream, that we have to take care of the pollution downstream, you know, like the chopping down of the rainforest and the overpopulation and all those things which may literally kill us all. But at the same time, if you're only dealing with that, dissipating the anger, letting the feelings come out in a safe environment, and not learning about where the source is, you know, upstream,
that's
you have to get to
that. That's
the
point.
What causes the anger? How does it? Why does it become anger in the first place? Not what I'm angry about.
Yes.
And most of those articles are what I'm angry about.
Yeah. Well, anger comes from frustration. I think you see that long continued. It will turn to rage with long sustained continued frustration, and then that rage builds up inside. So it doesn't require a cause, you see, or almost any cause will do.
You see. It stores up in the body?
In the body and in the memory, and it's working together.
Something insignificant could happen, unrelated to the original events that stirred it up, and could trigger the whole thing.
Yeah, so you can see it happening, that people are enraged by the economy or by the inability to live a proper life, or by all the problems that arise and frustrate them. Say in Nazi Germany, that rage built up, and as soon as Hitler suggested the Jews, there was the atmosphere favorable, so it just poured out.
So the anger here, how does anger develop here, just in discussing ideas?
Well, because the ideas are important, you see. Ideas are not merely ideas. That's another mistake of our culture, to say ideas are rather mild things, and then besides that, we have real feelings and real concerns. But it's from ideas very often, especially the ideas which are shared, which are part of the culture, that that our feelings, our strong feelings come. The idea that one of the ideas, you know, the whole set of ideas by which we are trapped in this society which frustrates everyone, right? And the idea that thought has no effect on it, it's just something out there.
My son wrote a line in a poem that he wrote that said, "You give focus to my demons." So perhaps we are all of us walking around with our little demons, and then we see something like the economy, and we say, that's why we're enraged.
Well, we will be enraged by systematic frustration. You see, we're not thinking of the economy, but just simply you can't do what you really want to do and what's necessary.
So when Carl asked the question, why was it that there was an argument here, that's a good question.
Because these ideas meant something to those people.
What do we want to do with these ideas?
Well, it's not up to us. You see, we don't. Well, these ideas are doing the thing. You see, the ideas which build up to the point of rage, we can't do anything with them. They do to us, right?
Last year you talked about this when the little argument occurred in the Monday dialogue, that it wasn't a matter of individuals speaking to each other anymore, it was two cultures.
Yeah.
And so the whole point is that the ideas really are acting through the human beings, that the human beings have been just used at that point.
You know, so I'm trying to get it down to the quality of what's happening when it's happening, not talking about it.
Well, what I hear being said here isn't that there was some anger introduced in the group, there was the anger of the group being exposed. There's this tremendous rage and anger going on. What was happening is that each person was being exposed to this thing that's inside themselves, which is this sort of innate hostility and anger that I heard people saying was existing.
There is something in existence, but at the same time, it probably isn't built up to that rage we're talking about, but when something is important to you, then it has high value, you're going to get a very powerful reaction. Zionism is an idea, right, which is regarded as supremely important by most of the people, and a lot of them anyway. And if somebody comes along and says, you know, that's rather a triviality, if we just brushed it aside, then we'd be much better off. Then you're threatening something which is very important to me, I mean, the existence of the state, right?
But there why is it that Barbara Ehrenreich perceives something called the cauldron of anger? Why does she, did she suggest that we are in our society at the end of the 20th century is in a state where it's angry?
Well, it's probably been angry all the time, but but it may build up now because it's particularly frustrating.
Are we born with a certain a storage of anger? I personally, because I have suffered my health because of the anger, and then it affected the blood. And because, so it's a poison, born with anger, and then storage of that anger, it accumulates in the cell and becomes a poison, and then it's a cause of one disease or the other. Now, before, there was the whole tradition said suppress the anger, justify the anger, and act against the anger.
Or act from the anger.
Or from the anger. Now, the understanding, and of course the years were coming here with Dr. Wom and all of us, has helped me to make, to watch the anger. I'm not anymore justifying it. I mean, the tendency is to justify it, but watching the justification. I don't care what causes it. The fact is, anger is rising and living with the anger. So watching it before it could last a week or maybe longer. Now it lasts less and less and less and less. But I'm not trying to cut it off right away. No, there is anger there. So one of my reactions was to go and feel secure getting in the kitchen and the refrigerator and eating. So the instinct of surviving, which is eating, was giving me certain security and pleasure. So watching this right away, not the first time, impulsively, I was going to the kitchen or cooking or eating or trying to feed somebody else. So that was a surviving instinct helping me to soften, to deal with the anger.
Yes, but it doesn't really, it still builds up, and at the same time you make another problem.
Another problem of overeating.
Yes, and the blood getting too thick.
Too thick. Then for days, the anger was so big that I was physically paralyzed, literally, for a whole week. Finally, of course, that's why I'm saying it has helped to be aware of that anger. So not trying to suppress it anymore, because I was doing a lot of work to suppress it, and feeling guilty because of for that anger, it means I'm not a good person, so much anger goes on. And so that guilt, that justification, I just try to go sometimes just be, if I could, alone, and say this is something that let help it die. And I'm watching the death of the anger. Watching the death of the anger.
Are we saying, or?
If I may say one thing now, the last 3 years, I'm taking a special remedy by the Heinemann homeopathy, not the New Age homeopathy, but the classical homeopathy, special remedy to affect the storage, the accumulation of the anger in the tissues of my organism. That's about anger, because that's the cause of my disease and my health.
Are we saying that here that it's not important then to know anything about the cause of anger? Because it seems to me that it is here. I mean, it's with all this dialogue that's gone on, I can see some of us, and in myself, came here with certain ideas about how dialogue should proceed, and we had some ideas in mind, maybe that it should be a learning experience, and we're here to explore, and we don't see, for some reason, we don't see learning going on by this emotional exchange, and so that generates anger. And I think the cause is important in helping us to be aware of the anger and to see it dissipate.
Yeah. That's the immediate cause, which it's sort of like the charge of electricity, which is very high tension and some weakness in the insulation, it will go there instead of there. Now, and therefore, the immediate cause determines when the anger will explode and how. But you see, we're building up. There may be a mild form of anger which was just built up, if people are. But we've been building up this rage in the culture, in the society.
That's a good thing to go into. Right. The deeper cause of whatever you mentioned is frustration.
Yeah.
And I would just use another word of limitation. So our culture seems to be fundamentally based on some sort of limitation.
But it's a wrong kind of limitation. You see, we have to limit certain things. You can't say all limitation causes trouble, but you see, frustration is a limit of something, a limitation on something that we feel is absolutely necessary, should not be limited, you see.
Powerlessness?
Yeah.
Well, there is powerlessness in the sense that you don't know what. Whatever you do, it doesn't help. And then the energy turns back and on your own impulses and will hold them back. You see, it may produce inhibition or even depression, you see.
See, that's what I guess I'm seeing is the cultural confusion, that certain things are perceived as being limited, which in the long run in a human life may not really matter that much anyway. And other things which maybe aren't being explored, which in other cultures they might have been more centrally given attention to, that, we'll call it the unlimited, or something in a human's life would put all these other limitations in proper perspective.
Yes, but you see, if you have a culture where you are unemployed, or maybe homeless people, you have wars going on, you have torture, murder, and you have all sorts of crazy, destructive things going on, and you want to say, well, the first response is, let's do something. But then you can see that you can only deal with this in some way which is not going to do it, you see. And especially if these things have been done to you, then one gets angry, you know, and the anger builds up because there's no place to go. It will turn inward. And
didn't you say that the stifling of creativity leads to violence?
I may have said that, but yes, well, that's one point that you want to be, as you were quite right, you want to be creative. You feel the urge and the need, but this is being blocked. You know, you may find a way, but I'm saying the society is not helpful. It's really blocking it.
So the violence is the result of the stifling of human creativity.
Well, that's part of it. It's the stifling of any human urge, which is powerful, and energy, which is powerful. It really means that the first response to being frustrated would be to get angry and try to overcome the cause of the frustration. And when you discover it won't work, then you have to hold it back.
Yeah.
And then it goes inward. And it affects the whole body, as you're saying.
It's a poison.
It poisons the body, or it also poisons the mind, right?
Well, you used a key word a moment ago, necessity again. These orders of necessity that we each carry about, which we also call values, and we also call our creativity and a whole bunch of other things. But basically, it's that which is necessary has to be. And if anything blocks it, anger is what happens.
Yes.
If you're living in a society that's fragmented, then it's creating values which can never be.
That's the problem. That isn't the problem.
That's frustration.
Yeah.
Everyone's got a different order of necessity.
There may be different things. Like suppose you have accepted the American dream. You're going to buy this house and take a mortgage and. You know, you will have that's a solution. And then suddenly you can't get the money to pay for it and you're homeless, right? Now that's an extreme frustration. Now, or else you're threatened with it, even if you know other people have had it. All of that can produce mounting rage, right?
Is anything ever the cause of anger?
There is an immediate cause in the sense it determines it's going to go this way instead of that way.
Yes, I mean, let's say people say, well, you talk too much, why don't you leave? And I get angry. And I would say, well, I'm angry because those people said that. But is that the cause of anger, or is it someplace else?
Well, anger, when it builds up, doesn't need a cause, it just stays there. It's like panic. You see, fear may be caused by a certain thing, but when it goes to panic, it sustains itself.
Okay, so I'm sort of making a statement on a question. That I think that's the cause.
Wow.
That these people did this to me. So I put the cause there. But this anger, what I call anger,
Did it actually come from that?
Well, no, it came from the whole conditioning, which made the self so important and made all the conditioning to respond with anger when you're frustrated and so on. You see, that was the general background.
So then this anger, which I attribute to these people who frustrate me, is actually something generated within my own organism.
Well, the ability to generate it is built into the conditioning, right, and into the organism, and certain things will make it, it'll trip it, will make it discharge. Right?
And somewhat on the assumption that there are good reasons to be angry, which is culturally shared.
Yes.
And
we have to explore that, you see, some, because are there good reasons? I mean, we mustn't begin with the conclusion.
Do you ever think that we're going to be angry with who or what pushed the button, rather than how it is that this button exists?
Well, we can't be angry at that, you see.
Can I say that maybe there's a lot of buttons in this, it's not just anger. I have to but there's jealousy in this, whatever. And when we went this off to this tangent, which may not be a tangent, David, you were about to talk about this notion of how do we keep our eye on what is taking place.
Yes, I'm trying to make a suggestion in that regard, that if you were learning to do something like driving a car, you would start on the streets that have little traffic, and rather than starting right in the middle of London or wherever, New York, right? It's all basically the same structure, whether it's strong or weak. You could get an insight into the structure, and this insight grows firm and strong, you see, or it is firm and strong. And you see, that's what I've been suggesting, you see. Now, I think that it's useful to repeat the words which are the immediate cause, but you can go deeper and say that it's the deeper source. And also, you can say, you see that you tell yourself, you know that this thing, if it's just a feeling which comes from the conditioning, it's not really important, right? We know that abstractly. But you see, the whole system is presenting it as supremely important, high, great value. And you see, I think that if you question that value, you may notice that the thing will go down, or if you affirm that value, then it will go up. Right? So you get a sense of the connection between the thought, the thinking, rather, the thought of moving this machine and the result. And it's not so fast or powerful that you lose track of it. You see, and I think if you take the full power of it when it's exploding, then very rarely could anybody really do anything until it simmers down. But even then, it's working and distorting everything.
My question was, it seems there's two that we talk about, we describe the process in past terms about what happens outside in society and what has happened in the past in history. And in another sense, it's taking place right here, and we don't seem to approach that directly.
Yes, we can ask, why don't we approach it here then? You see,
comment about comfort pointed to something here, and back to the other one about after the little increase in heat, the whole group seemed to enliven, and that something there was very positive, and I think it was the increase in energy. And the place where that becomes enthusiasm or inspiration or something is very positive. The place where it's restricted, that energy can turn to something else, and if it's bottled up enough, anger, bottled up enough, more rage. So there's something to be said for, and I think anger and rage are the build-up to finally letting that energy out. The issue that I go back to is that it turns into anger from what you call frustration. I would say is frustration is a sense of not being able to change it, which I then, just really unloading my assumptions here, has to do with the feeling of powerlessness. And that my sense of why we're here is because we sense that together that we do have some power that we aren't accessing yet. And that's where I would go back to the, I just wouldn't want to dissipate the intensity of the passion and the energy in anger and lose the ability to access the power that we have here.
Yes. Well, maybe the anger gets out and then the other one comes up. We have to clean the space from the anger.
Or perhaps the energy which is in the rage will now become the energy which can be used for something else, you see.
What? Anger too. I mean, the sense that that interchange was angry, or feeling like, you know, like Enrico said that. Well, I recognize this isn't going anywhere. I feel frustrated. I don't know what, you know, how to change what they're doing. This isn't what I want to be doing. Is, you know, the frustration and the sense of powerlessness there, does that where the anger comes in? I mean, we have a sense, I mean, I think the image you brought up before, the mirror and shaving, it seems really important to me here because, you know, I think that we kind of try to shave the mirror in a certain way. And in terms of what does this light up in our experiencing there, in terms of taking these sort of directions, somehow, I think a problem is the direction of our attention and the attribution of responsibility or the attribution of where this occurs becomes problematic.
That's what. What? No, we have to break anyway. We can go on with it later if you bring it up. Because I think that we're already past the time when we should be. And the eating and the kitchen staff will get very angry.
And